Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Boom. Hey, guys. Here we are back on Money for Lunch. And let me tell you, as always, you're going to get a huge return on your investment. I'm telling you, I know that you guys get to listen to this for free for the most part, and you're only having to put up with a few commercials. But I'm telling you, today's show, you're going to walk away with, I'm thinking $200, $300 worth of value today. I'm just like stoked at the quality of guests that we have today. It's just going to be that good. Anyway, my first guest, Ingrid M. Evans, is the founding partner of the Evans Law Firm in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Ms. Evans is here today to talk to us about personal injuries that happen to women from birth control. Ms. Evans is a board-certified civil trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, was named as a finalist for the California Consumer Attorney of the Year in 2009 and 2012, rated as Northern California Consumer Attorney, I'm sorry, got lost there on my teleprompter, Northern California and Top Woman Attorney Super Lawyer, 2012 Women Leaders in the Law, and was previously undefeated in jury trials when she worked for the City of San Francisco. Ms. Evans is licensed to practice law in California, New York, and D.C., and I think it's going to be fascinating to to talk to her today. Ingrid Evans, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I'm curious about this, and I'm glad that you're able to come on and share your ideas with our audience. What are the healthcare concerns for birth control like Yaz and Yasmin and what's the other one, Ocella?
The last one is Ocella, correct. Yaz, Yasmin, and Ocella are some of the top-rated, highly performing, highly sold birth control pills. But what's happening is that there's not full disclosure to the women that are using them that there's a serious, serious problem with them. What they do is they cause an elevated potassium level to increase in the blood, which causes pulmonary embolisms, deep vein thrombosis or DVT, blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, damaged kidneys, damaged gallbladder, and abnormal heartbeat and sometimes death.
All right. So my first question is, if it's this bad, how in the freak did the FDA allow this to get past them and continue it to be allowed in the marketplace?
Well, what's happening is back in September of 2011, the FDA issued a very severe warning saying that there's an increased risk of these problems with these particular birth control pills, Yaz, Yasmin, and Ocella. And then again in October of 2011, it issued another warning saying that the warnings were not sufficient for these products, but it's still on the market. They're still being sold, even though there's been over 140 deaths associated with Yasmin and over 50 associated with Yaz.
That's incredible. I mean, okay, as a lawyer and as a woman, do you find this to be just completely shocking?
It's offensive. It is offensive that they would continue to have this product on the market, even though there are deaths associated with it. All birth control pills have a risk. But to have such an increased risk with these particular type of birth control pills and have them still on the market, it's a problem, and it's a huge problem that needs to be addressed.
Right. Now, when you say that all birth control pills have some kind of risk, primarily I remember that my wife telling me that blood clots are the primary risk that she would be exposed to. Is that the normal risk associated with these type of pills?
Correct. Blood clots are the normal risk. And what's happened with these particular pills, Yaz, Yasmin, and Ocella, is that studies show that there's an increased risk because of it's a diuretic. The combination of estrogen and progesterone is a diuretic that causes increased potassium levels, which increases the risk for these particular birth control pills. So it's an increased risk that has a much higher prevalence of serious problems like strokes and blood clots.
Yeah, it just amazes me. It amazes me, and it shows you, you know, it's really about the money, because the only reason that these massive drug manufacturers are allowed to sell these products that are hurting people is because somewhere down the road, there's enough money being injected into either government, into somebody's hands. Somewhere, money comes into play. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Your thoughts?
That's exactly right. Back in 2008, Yaz sold, I believe it was $616 million in that 1 year. It was 18% of the market. Yasmin sold about $382 million worth of birth control pills, 11% of the market, and it's increased since that time. It's the most, they're the most highly used birth control pills in the United States of America.
And they're also, from at least my point of view, the ones that you see advertised on TV the most as well, correct?
Always, always. They're touting the benefits of them, saying that they have all sorts of increased benefits that other birth control pills do not. They're pushing, the manufacturer is pushing them for other uses other than birth control, despite these risks and despite these known problems, which to me is just horrendous that they would continue to do this.
It just, you know, it just makes you wonder, you know, what our leaders are thinking. I mean, not only our government leaders, but our business leaders, that they would really put women in harm's way over money.
Right, and taking a birth control pill should not put your life in jeopardy. It should not destroy your life. I mean, if you have a stroke or a clot at the age of 35, that would wreck your life potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's what's so funny, and I got to take a break. Okay, I got to take a commercial break, but I want you to think about this during our break. If somebody was to die, or if they were to have a serious injury or any kind of injury due to these pills, the manufacturer is going to deny liability, saying that the women knew there's risk. So you think about that, and you give me the answer right after this commercial break.
Sure.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back talking to attorney and personal injury expert Ingrid Evans, talking about the injury and risk that women are subjected to by using birth control pills, primarily Yasmin, and Ocella. And right before the break, I posed her a question, kind of a question, maybe it was more of a statement, that, you know, first of all, these things are heavily, heavily marketed. Their risk is heavily minimized. And when these people, these women suffer birth, injuries, or sometimes stroke or death, then the manufacturer is going to deny them compensation. Isn't that right?
That's correct. The FDA requires that warnings be associated with all pharmaceutical products, including birth control pills. And what's happening with these products is that they're not being adequately warned about all of the problems associated with it. So the increased risk, the potassium level increase, they're not being adequately warned, so that you can get around that and you can still go after the manufacturer for failing to properly warn the users of the product.
Okay, so in your experience, when you're dealing with some of these manufacturers, is it, you know, are they pretty, you know, easy to deal with, or are we talking each time it's a battle?
Any type of case that you bring is always a battle. There's been very few cases I've ever brought in my lifetime that have ever been really easy. And pharmaceutical manufacturers always put up a tough battle. So, yes, they're challenging. I started doing pharmaceutical cases in 1997, so I've been doing it for a while, and they can be very, very challenging. Fortunately,
sure.
There have been a lot of lawyers that have worked together. I work closely with other firms, and we bring cases together. And so that helps our odds of getting a better result for our client.
Right. And you know, a lot of people don't understand this because this is part of marketing. The reason they fight these cases, because every time they lose a case, then, of course, that could hurt their brand, and it may even make them look bad and maybe in front of the FDA as well. So that's why they fight them. They have literally – billions of dollars at their disposal. I mean, you're looking at, you mentioned that just between Yaz and Yasmin, they did almost $1 billion worth of sales. You know, that's a lot of power. And
right,
so,
just in 1 year.
Just in 1 year. I mean, and like you said, that was, I think you mentioned that was their first year out. So now they're bigger, better.
That's right. That wasn't their first year out, but that was definitely around the midpoint, and they're definitely plugging along, making quite a bit of money, and this is definitely the David versus Goliath fight. You know, you've got the underdog always that is underfunded, but we're on the side of justice, I believe.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let me ask you this. What is another type of birth control device that is causing injuries and problems for women?
Well, there's a number of them out there that are causing problems, unfortunately. I'll talk about the Mirena IUD. The IUD is a type of intrauterine device that stops women from becoming pregnant. And what's happening with the Mirena IUD is that it's after the first 30 days, there's a warning associated with the first 30 days that there may be a risk of perforation. However, after the first 30 days, it's actually migrating and tearing through the uterine wall and causing some permanent injuries with women and perforating their uterus.
Wow. You know, and I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but, you know, to all our female listeners, this is, again, my opinion. And, you know, I'm thinking if you are subjecting your body to this type of device where you have to insert it and leave it in your body, you know, just from the get-go, that sounds bad. I mean, it just seems like it's going to, no matter what, you're going to cause some injuries. And what you described to me sounds just horrific.
Yeah, not always. There's a lot of IUDs out there, and not all of them cause these terrible injuries. But this one, for some reason, has been associated with an increased risk of perforation and the tearing of the uterus. And it causes really, really severe injuries. It can cause women so that they cannot become pregnant in the future, which could, you know, really change their life course. One of the issues with the Mirena IUD, too, is that a lot of women don't know that it's causing injuries. They know that they're feeling pain, but they don't know where it's coming from. They don't know if they've done something wrong or if that's a normal feeling. And sometimes it's not until it's far along and far progressed where they have severe injuries and it might be permanent that they learn about the problem.
Okay, and so if you're feeling some of this discomfort, some of this pain, you're not really sure, you know, obviously, without question, you need to go, you know, if you have, what is it, the Mirena?
Mirena IUD. They should immediately.
The Mirena IUD. You immediately go see a doctor. I mean, even if you think it's, you know, even if you don't think it's that, go check it out. It can't hurt, right?
Exactly. They need to go see a doctor immediately, get a check, make sure that there's not a problem, because a lot of the women that we've suggested to go do that have, in fact, had perforation and uterus problems. So they need to then get it surgically removed to get it out of the uterus wall.
You know what? And I mean, it just sounds like if this perforation happens, you know, you're talking surgery to repair the damage?
Yes, it can be surgery. What happens is when it goes into the uterine wall and migrates and then can cause scar tissue, adhesions, infections, blockages, a host of problems. And so sometimes if it migrates too far, you will need surgery to remove it.
Wow. That's just incredible. Again, I'm always amazed at what is allowed to be sold out there, because you know what? And again, I say this all the time. It's really about the money, because if you and I partnered up tomorrow and said, hey, let's create a product like this IUD or like Yaz or Yasmin, and since we don't have a bunch of money, you know, we would probably be shut down fairly quick.
Exactly.
However,
right.
You know, if we get to the point where we're a billion-dollar monster, then we can, you know, skirt around the law or at least have politicians that will align with us and really kind of in some cases protect us.
There's a lot of power that the pharmaceutical industry has. They have a huge lobbying caucus. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of protection.
All right, we're out of time. Ingrid Evans, thank you so much. If you have a question about any of these products, if you have questions about any products at all, I'm going to urge you to check out Ms. Evans at Evans, EVANSlaw.com. That's EvansLaw.com. Get some answers. Have her point you in the right direction. Maybe go see a doctor. Ingrid Evans, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. Guys, as I promised, really great content there by Ms. Ingrid Evans. I mean, again, just because a pharmaceutical company is marketing something and telling you that it's great, do not be fooled. Do some research. Check out what's happening. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to be talking with Christopher Elliott about summer travel plans, and it's going to be fun, so just stay tuned.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. Let's talk summer travel. Memorial Day is literally just right around the corner. My next guest, Christopher Elliott, is a National Geographic Traveler's Reader Advocate, Consumer Advocate, Multimedia Journalist, and Customer Service Expert, known for his practical advice and creative solutions to customer service problems. His work is shaped by a drive to help people draw on the best traditions of investigative reporting and service journalism. He's also the author of Scammed, How to Save Your Money and Find Better Service in a World of Schemes, Swindles, and Shady Deals, a manifesto for empowering consumers and encouraging corporate responsibility. Christopher Elliott, welcome to Money for Lunch.
It is a great pleasure to be with you today. Thank you.
You bet. All right. So here we are. Memorial Day is just, a couple of days away. What's your thought?
Mm-hmm.
How many Americans will be traveling this Memorial Day weekend?
You know, AAA just came out with its annual survey for Memorial Day, and it projects that about 30 million people, just a little bit more than last year, are going to be on the road this weekend. So lots and lots of traffic.
30 million people. It's going to be crazy. And just to for our family, we're going to be heading to Vegas for about 2 or 3 days, and so that's always crazy on Memorial Day weekend. But anyway, we're going to add to the already zany time there in Vegas.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Let me ask you this. Go ahead.
You're going to do one of those Hangover 3 reenactments there?
You know what? That's what I'm trying to convince my wife to do. I'm telling her, you know, we're going to hook up with Mr. Tyson, get us a tiger or a monkey, whichever. I'm flexible. And just, you know, kind of see where it goes.
Yeah, I can go either way on that. We're going to actually be in Vegas in a couple of weeks. And my kids, and they're young. They've actually seen The Hangover. I can't believe we let them watch it. And, yeah, there's a tiger-monkey debate going on here, too. So good times. You promised everyone this would be a fun segment, and I am delivering the fun.
There you go. And the great thing about Vegas now is that you can see the monkeys and the tigers.
That's right. You can. There's a couple of shows there where you can,
that's
you can
right.
catch both. And, you know, I was there a couple of years ago, too, and you don't even have to go to a show. There's a couple of bars that have, I think, not a tiger, but I think I've seen a monkey in a bar or two there.
Yes, yes. And what do you call it? We were there a couple of years ago. We brought the kids. We were invited backstage to one of these tiger shows, and I forget the gentleman's name, but it was very nice. It was very cool. And my kids got to take their picture with the tiger and pet a tiger, and it was way cool. It was way cool. And I apologize for not remembering that gentleman's name, but it was a great show, and it was just so cool to be that close to something that big and powerful. Anyway, back to our travel plans. Let me ask you this, and I don't know if you know this, but how far will the average American drive this Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised. Most people think it's just maybe an hour or two, but the average road trip is 600. It's just over 600 miles. In fact, I just looked it up before we got online. It's closer to 700 now in the latest estimate. So that's a lot of driving. And, you know, the other interesting thing is when you think travel, usually you think of air travel, but actually most Americans are going to drive to their destination this summer. And really, anytime they take a vacation, they usually get in the car. So if you are going somewhere this weekend, chances are you're going to get in the car and get there.
Right. And you know what? And I just thought about this because, you know, we had this personal injury attorney just recently, just on the show prior to you coming on. And I'm thinking, you know, guys, you may want to see if you need to adjust your insurance. Because all this driving, all these crazy people on the road, you know, obviously the more you drive, the better chance you have of getting into an accident. So just a little, public service announcement. Check your insurance.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to the last part of that interview that you did with the personal injury attorney, and I was thinking, how in the world is he going to make the seg between, you know, a very deeply troubling topic about medical malpractice and summer fun, and you pulled it off brilliantly, my friend.
Well, thank you so much. You know what? If I really would have been on top of my game, I would have said, you know, hey, now that we finished talking about traveling through the uterine wall, let's, you know, National Geographic traveler Christopher Elliott talking to anyway. All right. Let's clean it up a little bit. All right. So let me ask you this. Here you are. You've written this book, Scammed. How to Save Your Money and Find Better Service in a World of Schemes, Swindles, and Shady Deals, which I think is a great title. So what are your favorite traveling tips for Memorial Day?
Well, the contrarian in me has to say that if everyone is going to be driving at one time of the day, don't go then. So there's a herd mentality that happens every holiday, but Memorial Day especially, because it's focused on that one weekend, that everyone wants to get on the road, what is it, the Friday morning of or the Friday afternoon of Memorial Day, and then they all want to come back on the Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning. So those are like the big
right.
drive time. And I used to live in Annapolis, and we would actually go and see the Delaware Memorial Bridge. It would be bumper to bumper, just at those times. So my recommendation is to go when no one else goes. We have something in our family we like to call the red eye, where we get into the car the evening before at about 9 o'clock, put the kids in their pajamas, put a blanket on them and let them sleep, and we drive. And it's a very restful time. There's not a lot of cars on the road. And we get there, if it's a long drive, we get there in the morning, and then the kids are well rested, and the adults, of course, are incredibly groggy, but it's a faster drive. Well, you know, one of us, we trade off, so one of us can sleep. But it is,
right.
We found that the red eye is a much better way. And also, you really do have, you're driving when you normally are sleeping, so you have that extra day when the kids can go and entertain the grandparents. So that would be,
right.
you know, just the contrarian in me would say, drive when no one else is driving.
Yeah, you know what, and that is a really good tip. I support that grain of thought, because there's nothing worse than, you know, hitting that massive bumper-to-bumper traffic or, you know, you go to the park or you go to the restaurant or you go to the event at the same time that everybody else is going, and it's just a mess. I typically don't like to, you know, go when everybody else is going. It just adds to the misery.
Well, I was just talking to my oldest son about the 1984 Olympics. I was just 16 at the time, and I still remember what they did in L.A., which was that they told people that they had to stay off the roads, and they were doing commutes in shifts. And for the first time
wow.
in decades, the freeways were actually clear, and people who were in L.A. visiting for the Olympics could actually get to the stadium and wherever they were going, and it was really neat. So there is something to it. It's just that everyone wants to go there at the same time. You know, get off work at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and everyone punches out, and they get on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's talk about this, because everybody is going to be traveling by car. What do you have as far as how do you save money on gas?
Yeah, everyone wants to know that. So the gas prices are somewhere around just over $3.50 right now. They are a little bit less than where they were at this time last year. So gas isn't really much of a factor. You know, when you get above $4 a gallon, people start thinking maybe I won't take that road trip. But one of the things that questions I get a lot is, you know, should I like get Gas Buddy and buy cheaper gas on the road, find something like that? And if your trip is going to be an average trip, chances are that you're going to be filling up maybe two or three times until you get to your destination, say you're driving to a relative's house. I would say definitely fuel up at the gas station that you know and that has the lowest rates, and you probably know where that is in your area, and then get an app like Gas Buddy for your iPhone or Android phone and find something that is, and you know, here's the trade-off. This is a lot of people do this, and it's crazy, is they will drive miles and miles out of the way just to save a couple of pennies on gas. And you know, in business school, they have something called the time value of money. It really
right.
is worth your time to go out of the way. So, you know, find something that's close to your road. If you're traveling at 95 or Highway 10, find a gas on gas buddy that is the least expensive and is the most conveniently located, and then use that gas station. And that'll usually save you some money. And usually if you're going to a place that you know, if you are visiting a relative, and a lot of people are, then you also know where the good gas stations are there. So you shouldn't get ripped off. I will tell you, the real rip-off gas stations are usually close to an airport, and I'll tell you why. A lot of rental car customers will return their rental cars and try to fuel up before they do that, because they'll get you know, charged, what is it now, $9 a gallon if they return it without a full tank. So the gas
yeah.
station close to there, and I live in Orlando. There's a gas station right here next to the airport that charges, I think, $1.50 more than you would get anywhere else. And it's perfectly legal, but you will get taken. So think twice before you get off at an airport and try to buy gas.
Right, right. You know what? And what you're saying there about the what do you call it? The time,
the time value,
money
right,
versus
yeah.
time. Yeah,
right.
Is
right.
that you know, we as consumers think, oh, look, I'm saving 10 cents on the gallon. What a smoking deal. We feel so
yeah.
we feel like rich. Look, I won the lottery. I'm getting this for, you know, for whatever, 20 cents cheaper per gallon. And again, it sounds like a lot, but you figure it takes you about, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10 to, let's say, I think the average gas tank now is like 14 gallons. So let's say if you're driving a big car, maybe it's 20 gallons to fill it up, or maybe 25 gallons to fill it up. So, you know, if you're filling it up on empty and you're saving 10 cents, you know, you're looking at really $2.50, maybe $3. Maybe if you're saving 20%, you're saving $5 or $6. Sometimes, you know, we forget that we're not, when it's all said and done, you're still paying a couple hundred bucks to fill up that gas tank. Depending on the size of your car, you're only saving $5 or $6. Sometimes it doesn't really make a difference. It just, you know, by the time you, like you said, by the time you drive out of your way and all that other stuff, you're really not saving a substantial amount of money to get that excited about it. But we sometimes do anyway.
Yeah. You know, people also do this with airfares, where they
yes.
will they'll stay up until midnight on Tuesday, thinking that that's when all the new airfares get loaded in, the airfare sales start. and they sometimes do, but you're only going to save maybe $5-$10 per airfare. And then you have to ask yourself, was it really worth staying up until 1 a.m. to get that airfare? And usually, you know, with the interrupted sleep, you're going to be cranky the next day. It wasn't worth it.
Right, right. And so, again, you know, it's just a matter of, I think you have to plan ahead. You have to do a little bit of research. I like the app you mentioned, the Gas Buddy, because, again, if it's convenient, and in some cases the difference is, you know, there's a gas station on the right-hand side and a gas station on the left-hand side, and, you know, the one on the left-hand side might save you 10 cents. Okay, it's not really out of your way. You're turning left versus turning right. No big deal. Fill up there. I have found that me personally and my family, when we do a road trip, I just assume pull into the gas station with the nicest facility where you have the massive selection of junk food and soda pop, and you have clean bathrooms. I'm telling you, I'll pay $5 for a clean bathroom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that actually, there's another really good tip I wanted to give your listeners, which is most people will overpack for a vacation. And if you look at the back of our car, you know, we're about to take off here and drive up to Panama City from Orlando, and then from there to Atlanta and then Washington. And the back of the trunk of our car is usually just packed as tight as you can get it. And we have found, because one of the other projects I work on is a family travel blog, and we've actually been traveling as a family for the last 2 years doing these very extensive road trips. And one of the things we found on our road trips is that you're better off packing about half as many clothes and twice as much food, because, you know, going back to what you were saying about the service station with all the food in it, if you get hungry and you're on the road, you really have no other option. If there's no food in the car, you have no option but to stop. You really can't pack enough food, we found. And if you leave something, you know, say you need a sweater or a sweatshirt or an extra pair of pants, you can always buy those when you're somewhere else. But food is a little bit more difficult, especially if you're driving a really, really long distance.
Right. Or I love this tip, because the or is, if you are picky about how you eat or what you eat or when you eat, having food in the car is a great lifesaver. It keeps you on your diet, and it keeps you from having to buy, you know, what do you call it, questionable food. I love this tip. I think that this is a home run, because, again, it solves two issues. You're packing less, which gives you a little bit more room. It's easier on gas. And then you're adding some more food that you know you're going to consume.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like a cooler and a thermos, then you're good to go, and you're not going to have to worry about stopping except for gas or to use the restroom. One of the big problems about food along the road is it's just so awful. I mean, you've got every variety of heart-stopping food, greasy spoon, diner. Every now and then I don't mind going to one of these things, but you can't make a habit of eating there, because you're
right.
Going to come back from your road trip and you're going to weigh 20 pounds more, and your doctor is going to put you on a couple of different medications to get rid of all the cholesterol. So I've really gotten very disappointed about the food with our road trips, because there's really, once you realize how limited the food selections are, you really do have to start packing your own.
No, I love that. You know what, to me, that is such a great tip, because it, again, we've already discussed, I mean, it just saves you time, it saves you money, it's better for you. You know, there's so many bad choices out there. And what happens, at least in my personal experience, is that, you know, you say, well, okay, let me drive a little bit further and then we'll pull over and get something to eat. And what happens is you keep driving. You should have turned off at that point, but you keep driving. And then when you pull over, there's nothing but crap available. And because you're so hungry, you will eat crap, because that's the only choice.
Absolutely. I like to call it the Yelp argument, where you're on your iPhone and you're looking up on Yelp. You're looking up all of the dining options, and you just don't see anything that has enough stars. So you just keep going. So by the time you see something that you like, you're desperate, and you'll order anything off the menu. Or worse yet, the place will be closed. That is the absolute worst thing that can happen to you. Is, you know, and then you end up having to go to the service station and getting cheese doodles and soda and that kind of thing, trying to sustain you.
Absolutely.
I mean, some of the
I love it.
Some of the kind of places we've been to across the country, you know, your highway rest stops are 90, 100 miles apart sometimes. Civilization is, you know, you're lucky to find a service station and a fast food place. And also, if you're doing the red eye like we talked about,
right,
not everything is going to be open. So you really have to be extremely mindful of the food and remember to pack enough.
I love it. Hey, Christopher Elliott, we're out of time, but I appreciate you stopping by. Great tips. Have fun with your family as you travel this Memorial Day weekend up to, Panama is where you're going?
Yeah, we're going to Panama City, Florida, right.
Panama City, Florida.
Yeah, you too. And, you know, have fun with your family. Enjoy Vegas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, guys, if you want to check out more about Christopher Elliott, you can go to Elliott.org. That's Elliott.org. And check him out. He's all over the web. He writes for the National Geographic as well as the Washington Post and all other, and he keeps his own blog. Again, Christopher Elliott, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
You're very welcome.
You bet. All right, guys, we are off and running. Great, great stuff. Great travel tips there by our travel expert, Christopher Elliott. Pack food, not clothes. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. Literally just having an awesome time on today's show. A lot of great guests. And we're going to continue with our next guest, Linda Prinster. Linda Prinster's HCG success story since... She's been an HCG success story since 2007. After battling weight all of her life, she wrote a book, HCG Weight Loss Cure Guide, the first on Amazon, and started helping people one-on-one in 2007 after finding personal success. Went on to co-author several other books and opened several physical stores and several online sites, all focused on the HCG diet. Linda Prinster, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your story and how you got involved with HCG.
Well, I have been a dieter my whole entire life, and, you know, I went up and down, but I mostly stayed up. So I always tried everything that came out, and I started hearing about – I kind of stumbled across the – actually Kevin Trudeau's book, The Weight Loss Cure That They Don't Want You to Know About. And I started doing some research, and I found out that it originated basically in Europe, and I started looking into actually going there for a month and trying to do the diet over there. So I was basically trying to figure out how much money I had to save and what kind of arrangements I would have to make. And in my research, I started coming across information that I thought, you know, I might be able to try this on my own here in the United States. So I did that. I did a lot of research, and I started working with my brother, who's a chiropractor, and said, you know, why don't we give this a shot? And so we did. We found out where to order it, and we started doing the research, and we actually started it ourselves, and we had a lot of success, and that's how we got started in it.
Gotcha. All right. So I had a little – I was coughing, so I was holding the cough button down.
Okay.
All right. So, okay. So you wrote your book, okay, and this is the HGH Weight Loss Cure Guide, and this is a supplement guide to Dr. Simeon's Pounds and Inches, and because I kind of flipped through the book, and so and I have one specific question, and maybe, you know, you can answer this, because it seems to me that part of the HCG, yeah, I keep saying HGH, but HGC, no, HGC, yeah. Is you go on this crazy low calorie diet, right?
Right.
Wouldn't you lose weight when you go that low? I mean, I've heard that some of these diets are like 500 calories, 800 calories a day. I mean, come on, you're going to lose weight anyway. What's the point of taking the HCG?
The point is the HCG, well, it makes all the difference in the world. It is true that most people would lose weight on a 500-calorie diet. The things that they would also experience are extreme hunger, fatigue, starvation. They would feel miserable, and they would lose the wrong kind of weight, as in they would lose the weight that you really need to, like, around your organs and that are surround your joints and things like that. So they would look very drawn, they would be miserable, and they would lose the wrong kind of weight and set themselves up poorly for metabolism in the future, where when you have the HCG in your system, it balances all of that, and it makes sure that you only lose fat, as in, you know, what they call the brown fat, sorry, or the fat that you want to lose. So you lose weight very different, and you feel very different. And it really, HCG is the hormone that is in your body when you're pregnant, okay? So most people gain a lot of weight when they're pregnant, but not
right.
All people. Some people, they can't keep any food down at all. And that's how it was actually discovered. So for the people who can't eat at all, either because they don't have food or they can't keep it down, that's how it was discovered. Dr. Simeon saw these people. They weren't even taking in enough calories to survive, much less have healthy babies. So when you are pregnant and you don't get any calories, it allows you to go into your stored fat and use that instead of the good fat that's around your joints and stuff. So that's the difference between a 500-calorie diet and 500 calories with HCG. You feel totally different. You lose weight totally different. And it's a world apart. One is very unhealthy, and the other one is quite healthy.
Gotcha. Love it. All right. You know, I didn't know that. Okay, so that gives me a lot of great insight. All right, let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about your book. You, what do you call it, self-published this book. Yeah, okay. And it looks great. You did a great job. Love the cover. And what service did you use? Was this CreateSpace, or how did you self-publish?
I did start out with I can't even remember the first one I started out with, and then I moved on to CreateSpace, and then eventually I just started going direct to two places to have quantities printed. But I definitely started out with one of them that turned into CreateSpace. I can't even remember what it was called. I love CreateSpace.
Gotcha. Okay. And I see that this is your fifth revision. So how many have you sold?
So far we've sold over of that book over 130,000. So
wow.
You know, it's not like what a Trudeau does, but for self-published, it's pretty good.
Well, first of all, Kevin Trudeau, you know, and I love Kevin. I haven't spoken to him in years, but you know, for you guys who don't know who Kevin Trudeau is, Kevin is one of those great marketing guys. He's always been a marketing guy. He started in the infomercial business, so he knows infomercials. And so the reasons a lot of his books do so well is, A, he's got this massive list that he can sell to. Second of all, he uses infomercials to sell his books. And so, you know, if you had his budget and his marketing experience, you know, every book you came out with would be a bestseller. And that's what essentially what he does. He's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just love what he does, and he does it really well. And his latest infomercial that I've seen is just really well done. It looks like this investigative reporter, and it's really well done. I just like I said, I always learn a lot from him. All right, let me ask you this. When you were struggling with your own battle of weight loss, what were some of the things that you did? I know you mentioned dieting and things of that nature, but let me actually back up a little bit more. How much weight were you trying to lose?
I was trying to lose about 20 or 25 pounds.
Okay, so you weren't very big. So you're losing about 20, 25 pounds, which I think is normal. I think most people would love to lose an extra, 20, 25 pounds, somewhere within that range. And you struggled with it for how many years?
Oh, forever. I mean, from grade school, I remember, eating 500 calories without anything else, and things like that. So, I mean, Weight Watchers, everybody thinks that most people, not everyone, but most people think that if you would just eat a healthy amount of calories and exercise, anybody will lose weight. And that is false. That works for many people. But there are a large number of people, especially at this point in the United States, that their metabolism is so screwed up because of the foods that we are given or take or however you want to say it, and for the antibiotics and everything put into the food, there are a lot of people in the United States at this point that even if they ate 1,200 or 1,500 calories and exercised, they would not lose weight and get to a healthy weight. So I know these people, and these are the ones that my heart really goes out to, because I know there are a lot of people with their metabolism is bad at this point, and that's all there is to it. And that's another thing that the HCG does that nothing else does. It at least purports to, and we believe that it does have a high impact on resetting or helping your metabolism.
Wow, cool. Now let me ask you this. When it comes to HCG, because I've seen stuff from different websites where, hey, get this. This is all natural version of HCG. What's your thought? Is all HCG the same? I mean, or do you have should everybody get it from their doctor? What's your take on this?
No, it is not the same. The two important factors in success with HCG is good HCG and good information. Those are the two factors that generally determine your success. HCG, I've done shots, I've done homeopathic, I've done troches, which is something you melt under your mouth, under your tongue. I've tried tablets. I try everything before I do anything or recommend it to anybody. And there are good forms of HCG. There are great homeopathics, and shots work great. There are terrible homeopathics and other things out there. I have probably tried 13, and I have been happy with two homeopathics. And then shots are usually you can count on shots, especially if they're, from your doctor or in the United States.
Right.
That method is a lot more expensive. I've also done shots. The very first time I did it with shots outside the United States because I was desperate and I really didn't think it would work. So, why am I going to spend a lot of money on, I just had to check it off. I always could say I tried everything I could. So when it didn't work, at least I tried. So I went into this with the same philosophy, and when it worked, I was astounded. So all HCG is not the same. Reputation is very important. The formula, when you start talking about homeopathic, the formula is not that important. It's whether or not the formula works. So you can't just look at a formula and say, that formula works. You really have to go by reputation. If somebody usually when people do it, a lot of people around them do it. If they all lose, 25 to 50 pounds, I think the HCG works.
Right. Gotcha. All right. Listen, we're out of time, but I wanted to say thank you so much for stopping by. Great information. I love your book, and my wife's excited to read it. So first of all, thank you for sending me a copy of it, because one of the things that's on my on my wife's reading list this weekend as we're traveling is to read your book. And also want to give out your website. It's DIY.
Do it yourself.
Yeah, HCG.com. DIYHCG.com. Check it out. Linda, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Guys, we're going to take a very short commercial break, and then we're going to be talking with William Jordan about you and your money.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, William Jordan, best-selling author, financial planner, and wealth manager. William Jordan is a nationally recognized author and lecturer on the subject of wealth management and financial planning. He has been seen on CNBC and quoted in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Forbes, just to name a few. He's the president and chief investment officer for the wealth management firm of William Jordan Associates, and he's here today to talk about his latest book, Strategic Wealth. William Jordan, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Happy to be here.
All right. Now, let me ask you this, because it does seem like your book really questions the way most wealth managers and Wall Street people approach investing. Why is that? Why is that? Why? What do you think that they're doing wrong?
You know, I did really write the book with the intention of trying to point out where I think Wall Street and the wealth management industry, in short, are really falling short. And I think the first and foremost place that they make a mistake is in the psychology of investing. The entire focus of Wall Street and of most wealth managers and wealth management firms is trying to maximize the rate of return that they can receive on individuals' investments, irregardless of the amount of risk that they're taking. And yet most individual investors want to put safety first and feel that they would rather protect from losing money in a bad market than try to chase the last 1 or 2 percentage points of gain in a good market. And so I really beat that drum and hammered that point that the psychology of investors and of Wall Street, they just don't match, and that's why people are so often dissatisfied.
Right, right. Now, I think one of the problems that Wall Street has, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is whether they make you money or cost you money, they still make money. They still get paid.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So you've got that built-in – it's almost a conflict of interest. I mean, we'd hope that everybody –
It is a conflict.
Okay, well, let's put a fine point on it, Bert. You're right. It is a conflict of interest, and hopefully – the professionals that people are working with are able to deliver the right investment advice irregardless of that compensation. But, you know, that's why myself and many other investment advisors have moved to more of the fee-based model, where they're not paid for transactions, they're not paid for activity, they're paid for investment advice and giving those recommendations. And I would say to clients, you've got your statement this quarter, you see what you made, you see what I made. If those numbers aren't in the right relationship, then you should be firing me.
Right. And I think that people just need to wake up, because this fee-based model is something that a lot of people are not familiar with and have really no education on, don't you think?
I would agree. I would say, I mean, many people have become more exposed to it. It's starting to gain, over the last even 10 years, it's really started to gain more clarity. The one caveat I would throw out is no fee structure is a perfect fit for anything, and I think to the point that you're making, people need to be at least somewhat engaged or involved in the process and can't simply assume, well, I've got the right fee structure, so now I don't have to pay attention any longer. I appreciate that our clients trust us to do that, and we obviously feel that we're worthy of their trust. But on the other hand, I like it when they are involved and they're keeping up with us on what's going on, what we're doing, and why we're making the investment choices that we are. So there's no magic wand that's going to fix from a fee structure standpoint. The point is you're paying for quality advice, and I think that's a reasonable thing to do. Do it in the way that does the best job of putting the advisor on your team and on your side, where they don't have a conflict over they make more money if they offer one investment than another.
Right. You know what, and I think that the other thing I'm going to add there, and I'm not a financial planner, is you really have to be involved in your wealth or financial planning process. You know, I think it's funny that something as important as money, some people love the whole set it and forget it. And what you're saying is, even though you could do that, it's really not what you're advising. People need to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you know, we refer to that and talk about that a little bit in the book. And the funny part, and in a sense funny, but the interesting thing to observe in my role is I'll meet with someone. They've got a significant amount of wealth. We're talking about what to do with that. And I'll ask the question, ultimately, what do you want this money to accomplish for you? And in many cases, I almost get this kind of a blank stare back, like, well, I don't know, I just want to invest it. Well, if to your point, if you're not engaged in a here's where I'm going, what I'm trying to accomplish, you don't know if you're going to get there, and you probably are on the wrong path.
Right, right. Hey, also, you know, let's talk about your book a little bit more, because in your book, you also call into question the value of active money management. Isn't the whole point of Wall Street that professionals can pick stocks better than anyone else? I mean, that's kind of what their whole image is about.
Well, you're right. You hit the nail on the head, and it is one of the things that I really kind of rake them over the coals for, because every piece of scientific research, every piece of evidence, every independent study that has ever been conducted has said no one can accurately predict the short-term fluctuation of the stock market or pick individual stocks that will outperform the market as a whole. At least they cannot do it and be identified in advance as to who will do it. And, I mean, Bert, you and I both know that's true, and it's so true that on the prospectus, on the cover of every mutual fund ever sold, it says, what, past performance is not an indicator of future results? And then how is every mutual fund actually sold or recommended? Well, look at our past performance, and that's why you should invest with us. So it's like the king doesn't have any clothes on, and everybody knows it, but nobody wants to say anything. And so I really am emphatic about that the number one thing investors have control over is the costs that they're paying. And people are paying, in some cases, 2, 3, 4% a year for active money management and active professional advisors when there's no proof that that's going to deliver value. So why are you paying for something that the research actually says is not worth paying for?
Right. And by law, you know, they can't really do anything, you know, as far as, you know, well, I guess my point is by law and really just by pure logic, the fact that, again, as they state in their prospectus, past history or past success does not indicate future success. There's no guarantee.
And it's almost like the Wall Street kind of says that on the one hand with a wink, and then they tell you all about their past success. And what's not fair, sound like I'm whining to say what's not fair, but what's not right to me is Wall Street can stack the deck in the past performance area. Have you ever noticed how many mutual funds the average fund company has? I mean, they have hundreds and hundreds of funds, and the reason why they keep coming out with new funds is if they have a fund and it does badly, do you ever see them advertise, hey, our fund was down 7% last year when everyone else was up? No, they just close the fund and they open a new one, and they act like, and eventually the law of large numbers is going to say if you just open enough funds, you're going to have a fund that does well, and now you've got a past performance to advertise, and you're not even required legally to tell anyone about the previous performance. Could be the same manager for the same company, but that was a different fund, so they don't have to report that information. That it's just not right.
Right, right. Well, and I love the language that they use. This fund, we closed it because it was oversubscribed or something like that. You know, they make it sound like, you know, so many people got involved in this fund that we had to open up a new one. It wasn't because we were losing money. It's because it just became oversubscribed.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that never happens, but there are, if you go back through the history of Wall Street and the number of mutual funds created, there have been over 30,000 mutual funds created, and about 10,000 of those, and I'm rounding off here, but about 10,000 of those are no longer in existence. Why would a mutual fund ever not be in existence? Because of the bad performance. So, yes, there are times where a fund could be legitimately closed to new investors, but more often than not, if they're closing out a fund, it did poorly, and they don't want to, you know, they don't want that on their sheet. And when the fund company puts out their list of funds and the past performance, and you look through that and you go, oh, wow, look, all those 1 year, 3 year, 5 year numbers, they all look great. That's because they closed the ones that looked bad. So if I could make investments for clients and only tell you about the good investments, you'd think I was a genius. And then if I had to actually say, well, but we did make this one bad investment. Oh, okay, so they aren't perfect. And, you know, you take that ability of Wall Street's to kind of rewrite history and then throw in the amount of money that they have to throw around, and you understand why people tend to make the decisions they do, because they need to be aware of how the game's being played by the industry, and you know that's a part of the reason why I wrote the book, was really to try to call into question some of the practices on Wall Street and make sure the public understands where are they really falling short.
I love it. I love it. Hey, we're out of time, William. But guys, check out William Jordan. You can find out more about him and his services at WJAOC. That's WJAOC.com. William Jordan, thanks for stopping by and sharing.
You bet. And the book's on Amazon. It's Strategic Wealth.
Strategic Wealth, best-selling book there on Amazon. Check it out. William Jordan, thanks again.
Thanks.
Guys, we're off and running. Actually, we can all stop running because the show's over. We will see you here tomorrow on Money for Lunch.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.